Okay, so, well, the abstract of my talk is right there, studying braids in an annulus instead of in a disc is a theory of braiders, which play the analogous role of the Drinfeld associator. So a priori, if you just look at the equations, they appear to be strictly weaker than the associator ones, and they make sense in more spaces. However, we've done some computations, and we have some evidence, at least, that they are actually equivalent. So if they do turn out to be equivalent, that means that it may be useful to go and look at a lot of the things that you can do with associators in the simpler context of braiders and see if you can get new information.
Oh.
Okay, so I'm going to spend the first part of my talk constructing certain categories of braids, and I decided to give a very quick review of why you should care about these kinds of things. So a parenthesized braid is kind of like something I'm drawing here. It's just like a braid, except the distance between strands matters. So if you look at the bottom here, we have two points on the left, which are close together, and then one all the way on the right that is further apart. And then at the top, we have the point on the left, far up from the two points on the right that are closer together. Right? So they have a different parenthesization. Okay? So these are different points, and this is a non-trivial braid. Okay, so you can organize a collection of all parenthesized braids, and well, the original way it was done was as a certain type of category with some extra structure on it. Alternately, you can write it as, or I guess nowadays most people usually write it as a certain type of operet, but however you want to do it, you can define this structure on parenthesized braids. You can do a similar thing for chord diagrams for parenthesized braids, which if you don't know, I'll explain a little bit later, but not too much. And the data of a Drinfeld associator is roughly equivalent to the data of a structure-preserving functor from this category of parenthesized braids to parenthesized chord diagrams. Okay, so the idea here is to replace braids in the disc with braids in the annulus, by which I mean, well, really a braid in the annulus crossing intervals, so the solid torus. So, you know, just things like I draw here. Okay, and the way I'm generally going to represent braid in the annulus is really just as a certain type of usual braid, just where the idea is that you just draw the core of your braid, of the annulus, sorry, as an extra strand, and the only extra condition you have on this strand is that it has to start and stop at the same point. Okay, so you're allowed to, say, start this strand and end it on the third point, but this one has to start and stop at the same point. So really, the annular braid group is a subgroup of the usual braid group on n plus 1 strands, where the first strand has to start and stop on the same point. Okay, so there's a presentation for it that's not important. Maybe it's that something that's slightly important is that if you look at the pure annular braid group, well, the condition that you the first strand starts and stops on the same point becomes trivial. So the pure annular braid group is isomorphic to the pure braid group on n plus 1 strands. Okay, so now just a little bit about how I'm going to organize all these into a category. You should think that, so the objects are just finite ordinals, and the idea is that you're thinking of the, so a morphism from m to n is supposed to be a braid. There are n points at the bottom, and there are n points at the top. Of course, we're dealing with braids and not tangles, so you can't have braids unless between different numbers of points on the top and the bottom. So we have, so the set of morphisms is empty if m does not equal n, and if m is equal to n, well, you have p, which is just a permutation. So the idea is if you go back and look at that braid here, every braid you can give to it a permutation just by looking at what happens to the points, right? So the zeroth strand here, I call the core the zeroth strand, usually not the first strand, but anyway, so the zeroth strand ends up at the zeroth strand, so the permutation is in 0 to 0. The first strand goes to the third strand, so it sends 1 to 3, and so on. Okay, so that's the permutation that is given by this braid. So we keep track of that, and then we do a formal linear combination with coefficients and some arbitrary Q algebra A. So the fact that it works over any Q algebra is going to be important for a technical reason later on. Essentially, things become group schemes, but it's not really important. Anyway, so you do formal linear combinations of diagrams like that as our morphism. And the only condition is that when you're taking formal linear combinations, you have to take only grades of the same underlying permutation. Okay, so morphisms are formal linear combinations of things like this. Okay, so that's the that defines our category. So I'm going to kind of, throughout the talk, I'm going to, I said in my abstract that braiders are simpler than associators, so throughout the talk I'm going to kind of review what happens in the associator case, just to kind of, you know, let you see how it is simpler. So you need not only this category, you need to put some extra structure on the category to get associators. So in really, these are all functors from our category to itself. I'm just going to tell you essentially what happens on individual braids, and then you can, you know, just put it into the whole category and dump this way by linearity. Okay, so in the case of parenthesized braids, essentially you can summarize these structure operations as saying that the collection of all the parenthesized braid groups for all n form a Cousin-Fischel set. So what that means is that for the group of parenthesized braids on n strands, we have these di operations for every I from 0 to n. So these di operations are the strand doubling operations. So if you have a diagram, you can just double the I strand. And these si operations are the strand removal operations. So si just removes the I strand in the braid diagram. Okay, so what happens in the case of annular braids? Probably should be doubling or something, not extension, but doesn't matter. So essentially, in the case of the annular braid groups, you can forget almost all of the doubling graphs. Ignore that they exist. All you need to keep track of is this D0, which I've drawn here. So it essentially doubles the zeroth strand. So you just put an identity strand right beside the core of your annulus, and then just whatever happens, you know, you copy down whatever happens. Okay? So you need the zeroth doubling operation. And then this here is really an extension operation. So if you're in the nth braid group, dn plus 1 adds an identity strand to the right of everything else. Okay, and that's the entire structure. That's all you need. So notice, very importantly, that there are no parenthesizations. So I've thrown away all parenthesization information, and I've thrown away almost all of these doubling operations. So strand removal operations, maybe here, maybe not here. It's kind of a technical thing that we'll probably show up later, but not for the purposes of this talk. Okay, so the alternate picture.
Maybe I'm not entirely sure. You say it's all you need, but I mean, like, kind of, what if I still do want to do this doubling, or it would kind of follow from this structure? Or, I mean, what's the precise framework for how do you judge what I need or what I don't?
Essentially, it's the minimal set of operations you need such that I can, well, generate the, in a certain, in a later, in a couple seconds, I'm going to tell you a way to generate this category very easily. So it's kind of like the minimal operations you need to generate this category simply.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You can reproduce pretty much all the other operations using these ones.
Mm-hmm. No.
No, that's not true.
No, the whole
the other operations don't exist in here. You could define another structure where they do, but you can't do those operations here. Like, they're impossible.
Yeah.
They're not part of the structure at all. The I doubling operations.
It's a smaller and weaker structure that nevertheless reproduces associators.
Mm-hmm.
So,
oh.
Or conjecturally at least.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the alternate picture, you can view the category, instead of viewing the parenthesized braids as a category with these extra structure, you can view it as the operating groupoids, where if you have two braids and you want to do the ith partial composition, you essentially just take one braid here, one parenthesized braid, and you glue it into the ith strand of the other one. And this defines the operating structure. Okay, so the analog of that in the annular case basically boils down to the structure of a strict monoidal category. So, for similar reasons, you can ignore all of the gluing operations except the zeroth one. So all you need to remember is this tensor, what I'm going to call a tensor product, which is like the zeroth partial composition. So if you have a diagram, two diagrams here, and you want to take their tensor product, you glue the diagram on the right, into the zeroth strand of the diagram on the left. And you get what I've drawn here. Okay? So an alternate way of saying it is that it's, you know, that it's just generated by this, it's the Strickland model category. Sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. So the only other structure you need is, on this category is this tensor product structure. And finally, there's a coproduct. So I guess this is kind of out of order. It's not really clear at this point how you take the coproduct of a category. But just think of the individual angular braid groups. You can look at their group algebras and take their coproduct makes sense. And I just want to define the coproduct by making any individual angular braid angular braids group. Okay? So that's the coproduct. Since we're going to be interested in describing functors out of this category, it's useful to have a simple presentation of the category. And that's what this claim here does. So the claim is that BA is generated by repeated applications over two operations, or alternatively as a Strickland model category, by tau and sigma, so by these two angular braids, their inverses. So that's all you need. You only need these four, I guess, diagrams, or these four generators. And then there are some relations that they need to satisfy. The really important relation is this braid relation. So this, if you ignore the zeroth strand, this is just a Reitemeister 3 relation. So it's kind of, if you embed it, it's in a Reitemeister 3 beside a bar. Okay? So it's sometimes called a shielded Reitemeister 3 because you have this zeroth strand, and then beside the zeroth strand you have a Reitemeister 3. So that is a really important one. Then there are these commutativity relations here, and there's a mixed relation here, which will show up, but they're not as important. And finally, there are some mostly unimportant relations that tend to be automatically satisfied by things, is all I mean by unimportant. So they're usually called locality and spacing scale. It just kind of means, like, you know, if you have some crossing on this part of a braid diagram and some crossings on this part of a braid diagram, you can slide one above the other and things like that. Generally, things that are automatically satisfied. Okay, finally, I want to say a word or two about filtrations and completions. So I'm not going to be precise about this, but the way I constructed my category was essentially by, I took formal A-linear combinations of braid diagrams. So essentially I'm taking the group algebra, the A-group algebra of all my individual angular braid groups, and I'm kind of gluing them, all of these group algebras together into a category. Right, so pretty much any kind of thing you can do with a group algebra, you can extend to the entire category. Okay, so you can do ideals, you can do quotients, and you can do inverse limits, so you can do unipotent completions. Okay, so you define the augmentation ideal of my entire category. What it turns out to be is just the set of all morphisms of the form here, such that the sum of the coefficients is equal to zero, so the obvious thing for an augmentation ideal. Then you define the powers of that, give you the augmentation or the unipotent filtration. You can define the unipotent quotient to be just your entire category, quotient put out by these ideals, and you define the unipotent completion to be the inverse limit like this. Okay, so just one quick word to people that are familiar with angular braid groups. So this is not the Vassiliev filtration, because it turns out that in the case of angular braids, the augmentation ideal filtration is different than the Vassiliev filtration. And it's also, so there are also some work with cyclotomic associators that are somewhat similar, but it uses a completely different filtration. Okay? Right, so now let's go, so that constructs the first category we need. Now let's go to the second one. So if I just go directly to the definition, it may look a little bit unmotivated, so I gave a very quick outline of what core diagrams are. So a core diagram, kind of, one way of thinking about it is you kind of ignore everything except the crossing information and maybe the underlying permutation. So first of all, if you look at this, you'll see that that these two strands interchange place, and I want to write the core diagram by putting the permutation all the way at the bottom, and I'm putting the rest of the crossing information. So if you kind of walk up along this braid, you first see a crossing between the first and second strand, which is what this thing represents. Then you see a crossing between a strand and the core, which is represented by this, and so on. Okay? So the core diagram, we just get all this crossing information. And then we're going to represent this as a permutation. So this is the permutation that is given by this core diagram. And then we have this, we can think of the rest of it as being an element of the Grinfeld conal algebra. And the way you do that is if you have a bar connecting the I strand to the J strand, you write down a copy of TIJ in the Grinfeld conal algebra.
Mm-hmm. Is there a double cross?
Factors of two, it's basically just because if you think of the, I'm talking about the augmentation ideal filtration, so it's kind of generated by the generator in the augmentation ideal will just be this entire crossing minus one, right? So I'm just drawing it as one thing. Does that make sense?
But on the other side, I mean, if the black squares were blue, you would draw it as two.
Yeah. If this were a crossing between just these two strands, I would put two. The point is that it's represented by a single generator in our group, right? There's this one generator that goes around. So the generator it's not possible to just go around the core halfway and then stop there. That's not a generator in our group, right? You have to. Because that would make this core end up in the second place, right? So the generator is you go all the way around. So that's why I'm representing it as just one. But so you have to be a little bit careful with factors of two when you want to talk about expansions later on. So this is kind of well. Okay. Okay, so now I want to organize this into a category, the same that I did the category of braids. So I kind of do the same thing. The objects are supposed to be the top and the bottom. So the objects are just these sets of points here, right? And then I want to take a formal linear combination of diagrams like this. Well, we know a diagram like this can be thought of as an element of the Grinfeld conal algebra times a permutation. Okay, so I just take formal linear combinations of d times p, and those are the morphisms in my category, and you're supposed to think of those morphisms as formal linear combinations of diagrams like that.
When you take the inverse rhythm, you complete the b1n with respect to, so you have a pure Bayesian group there, yeah? And if you complete with respect to your filtration, then this is a usual Bayesian completion of the pure Bayesian group, yeah?
Probably.
This is a justification why you're taking t n plus 1 and not something.
That's kind of why I mentioned right at the beginning that the pure annular braid group is just the braid group on n plus 1 strands.
Yeah.
That's why we get elements of mm-hmm. t n plus 1 mm-hmm. of different mm-hmm. basic energy. Okay. So the next thing I want to say is, well, this category can be given all the same structure that was given to the category of braid diagrams. So I guess one thing I didn't mention when I was talking about core diagrams is that the algebraic way of saying what was going on here is we have a filtered space. Whenever you have a filtered space, you can take the associated graded. So this space of core diagrams is the associated graded of this filtered space. Okay. So you can put all the same structure on the category of core diagrams, you can put on the category of annular braids. So one way of thinking about it is, well, we just took the associated graded, and that's a functor, so you can take the associated graded of all the operations, and if you do that, what you get is this doubling operation here. You just double the zeroth strand as before, but now if you try to double this strand, well, we have a core connecting it. So where do you connect the core to? Well, you just sum over all ways of connecting it to the diagram, to the two strands that you created. Okay? So you just have to add this sum. And for the extension operations, well, there will never be a core interfering with this new strand, so you always just add an identity strand on the right. Okay, so again, we have these two operations, and that's all we need for this simple thing. Okay, again, if you prefer this opera picture, now our tensor product is essentially gluing into the zeroth strand again, but we run into the same problem. So if we want to glue this diagram into the core of this diagram, well, we need to figure out where to connect this cord to, and you do the usual thing, you just sum over all ways of connecting it to the strands in our new diagram. Okay, and you get that. I mean, you have to check that, you know, things like, do we do this one above that one or not, and that follows from things like 14 relations and so on. Okay, so that's the structure on our second category, and finally we want to give it a coproduct. And here, before we define our coproduct by making the individual grade diagrams group-like, well, we looked at an associated graded, which is kind of like a Lie algebra type thing, so now we want to make them all primitive.
Individual chords, not individual chord diagrams. Each chord is primitive, not
yes.
Every chord
yes,
diagram.
Yes, that's right. Okay, that's enough today. Okay, and now we have a similar theorem to the one before about giving a presentation. So this category of chord diagrams is generated by these three things, which I call, for obvious reasons, H, IH, and IX, and subject to the relations I've written here. So this is pretty much just like the analog of the braid equation, just now we have, instead of real crossings, we just have these these artificial crossings, or whatever you want to call them. And this semi-classical braider relation, well, it's pretty obvious that it's true, but it's not obvious that it's all you need, but it's not too hard. Okay, and of course we have, so these two are going to come up later. Again, the locality and spacing scale won't come up again, but it's just the usual sliding type things that I don't really want to get into. Okay. And as before, we can define filtrations and completions, and we can take the unipotent completion of this category of chord diagrams. Right, so I've kind of told you about these two structures. Now I want to say how to get associators and how to get growth leap type modal groups out of them. So I already kind of told you how to get associators, but it all fits into an extremely general picture. So, so you let O and P be isomorphic algebraic structures of some type. So this can actually be a really general thing. You can put groups or something simple like that there, but you can also have some arbitrary structure where you have, say, a bunch of different sets, and you have a bunch of different operations of different arrays between these sets. So maybe it takes some operation takes three elements from this set, four from this one, and then I put something in the third set. Right? So I mean, if you like fancy words, it's an algebra for a colored operand. Okay? So anytime you have two isomorphic algebraic structures, the groups you can define, there are two groups which act simply and transitively on a set of isomorphisms between these algebraic structures. The first group that acts simply and transitively are the automorphisms of the algebraic structure O, and I'm going to call those things the GT of O, and these things act by precomposition. Secondly, the automorphisms of P act by postcomposition on a set of isomorphisms, and I'm going to call both automorphisms GRT of the structure P. And I'm going to call the set of isomorphisms from O to P the set of associators from O to P. So, I don't know if calling these things GT, GRT, and associators really is justified or not, but the reason I do that is because if you take the special case where O is this unipotent completion of a category of parenthesized braids, if you take P to be a unipotent completion of parenthesized chord diagrams, then the set of isomorphisms from PAB to PACD is more or less equivalent to the, or is essentially equivalent to the set of Grünfeld associators. GT of PAB and GRT of PACD become the unipotent versions of the GRT and GT groups as defined by Grünfeld. Okay, so that's kind of why I'm calling them what I'm calling them. Okay, so now the idea is we have two algebraic structures, angular braids and angular chord diagrams. So now we can play that game and define associators for the angular case and growth leap type modal groups for the angular case. Okay, so what is a braider? A braider is going to be is supposed to be something that is essentially equivalent to a structure preserving functor between our two categories here. Just to be completely clear, when I say structure preserving, I mean it has to require it has to preserve the operations on the category I defined earlier. It has to preserve the underlying permutation of a braid. And it has, so there's one more condition that the GR of Z has to be the identity. So if you recall, this is a filtered space. This is its associated graded. So if you take the taking associated graded is a functor. So if you take the associated graded of a map from there to there, you get a map from the associated graded of BA to the associated graded of the associated graded of BA, which is just the associated graded of BA. So this is probably a bit confusing if you don't really know it. And therefore it makes sense to have it be the identity. Okay, so usually you can, at least in the case of just parentheses and grades, there's a nice way to write this in terms of the structure without kind of putting it in by hand, but I haven't found a way to do it yet, so I'm just adding it here by hand. Okay. So now we want to find structure-preserving functors from BA to CEA, so what do we need? Well, if you go back to our claim, we need to find what the image of tau is, we need to find what the image of sigma is. In order to get something well-defined, it needs to preserve these relations. Okay? So these three relations, the locality, like I said, the locality and space and scale are automatic. So if you translate that, you get everything here. Okay, so by the fact that everything is structure preserving, we know that the first generator can be written in the form of this generator of parenthesized core diagrams times some B, where now B will be in the Driffield Kono algebra, so there'll be no permutations left. The permutations are taken care of by this vector. And sigma, similarly, so more specifically, B is in the Driffield Kono algebra, the completion of the Driffield Kono algebra on three strings. Similarly, the generator that goes around the core will have to go to H, where the generator H times again something in the pure in the Driffield Kono algebra. And since we're in the Driffield Kono algebra, well, it kind of turns out that it'll have to group like it's in the Driffield Kono algebra on just two strands. It's an exponential. So that one is essentially trivial, and it's all about construct or finding this B. So that's what a braider is. Okay, so a braider is a group-like because the coproduct is part of a structure. Non-degenerate, so this has to do with string removal operations, which I didn't talk about, so I graded out, so I mean it's negotiable at this point. Element B in the uniform completion of the Driffield Kono algebra, which satisfies these three equations. And these three equations are exactly just an algebraic way of writing down those diagrams that I drew beforehand. Okay. Right, so now we have a definition of a braider. I'm just going to define the collection of all braiders to be this. Okay. Now that we have a braider, the next thing we're going to talk about are growth and detection of groups. So we play essentially the same game as before. We need a functor from the category CDA to the category CDA. If you remember, there were three generators of our category CDA. There was this H, IH, and IX. So they have to, for similar reasons, it has to go to the generator H times some gamma 1 in the Driffield Kono algebra on two strands. And IH has to go to something like this, with gamma 2 in the Driffield Kono algebra on three strands, and similarly, gamma 3 has to be in the Driffield Kono algebra on three strands. And, okay, so here are the generators. If you recall, we have these two relations, and if we translate these two into algebraic language, we get the following definition. So I'm not going to bother with the group law, so just as a set, the group GRT is the collection of all group-like non-degenerate triples, gamma 1, gamma 2, gamma 3, which satisfy this equation, these two equations here. So there's a classical braider equation and a semi-classical braider equation. As before, so gamma 1 is in the Driffield Kono algebra on two strands, so essentially it's easy to see it has to be the identity. Furthermore, if you look back at the semi-classical part, this is going to go there. If you just look here, you can kind of see that gamma 2 is more or less determined by gamma 1 and gamma 3. So all we really need to do is find gamma 3. Once we have gamma 3, we're essentially done. Okay, the group law is given by composition of morphism of our morphisms. I mean, you can write down an explicit formula for what it is. I didn't do it, so you can play. Furthermore, you can play exactly the same thing with GT. It wasn't useful, I haven't used it yet for anything I've been doing, so I didn't even bother writing it up. Like, there's a similar definition for GT in terms of, well, similar statement. Okay, so now let's see what we can do with these things. The first thing to note is that, so right at the beginning of my talk, I said that that graders appear to be strictly weaker than associators. So this is precisely what I mean by that. If you have any Drinfeld associator phi, you can construct a grader out of it. Essentially, this picture shows you how to do it. So here I'm thinking of B and phi as being functors, not as being this power series. We want to figure out what B of this is. Well, this is essentially a usual chord diagram, just with an extra strand. So now we want to think of this as a usual chord diagram on three strands and apply our functor phi to it. But the problem is, to apply a usual associator, you have to have a parenthesization. So there's not a canonical way to do it, but just choose some parenthesization and evaluate your associator on this generator, and that will give you a grader. So if you, in the algebraic language, the grader associated to the power series of phi is just what I've written here. So I call it C because it's, well, essentially some sort of a contribution type thing. Okay, and furthermore, it's pretty easy to see that C is injective, so you can think of associators as sitting inside graders. But the idea, but there's no reason to think every grader comes from an associator. And this kind of goes back to throwing all these other operations away, right? We have to preserve far, far less. So it would seem like it should be not so hard, or a priori, it seems like there should be graders which do not come from associators. Okay, so what have I actually proven so far? Not so much, but the theorem that I have is that graders can be constructed degree by degree, and therefore rational graders exist. Well, in fact, it's obvious from this that rational graders exist because rational associators exist, but the fact that things can be constructed degree by degree really is a non-trivial result.
The guarantee of the existence of rational associators.
Pardon?
It can be constructed inductively and independently of the existence of rational associators.
Right, yes. So, I mean, it's pretty certain I would never have come up with a proof on my own, but luckily it's very similar to Drinfeld's proof of a similar result for associators, or even more closely to Drawer's reformulation of Drinfeld's result. So I don't think I'm going to really go through the proof at all. It's in the handout if anybody actually cares. But yeah, it's essentially following Drinfeld's. I don't really want to explain this diagram. This is kind of the key diagram that allows us to prove the result. Okay, all I really want to say in connection with graders being simpler than associators, so this diagram I've drawn here more or less plays the role of the so-called commutative associahedron in the theory of Drinfeld associators. So just to how much simpler things are here, the corresponding diagram in the case of parenthesized braids has something like 12 faces and 20 vertices or something like that. Right? This one has 6, well, I've kind of hidden a couple of vertices here, so maybe at most 10 vertices and one face. Right? So really much, much simpler. But the proof is about the same order of magnitude. You have to follow the same steps Drinfeld did. It's just each step is simpler. Okay, so yeah, I'm going to skip the rest of the proof. The rest of it is pretty standard. It's exactly the same as the case of usual associators. So this part of the lemma follows from the fact, essentially this is why I define things in terms of this arbitrary Q algebra A, is that these are group schemes, and therefore I can apply results. Let's say I just have to look at the Lie algebra. And at the Lie algebra, you just get an equation like this. Now that the semi-classical grader equation is gone, right, that's a very important point, you just get this equation here. And if you have some gamma that satisfies this equation up to, say, degree n minus 1, well, it's trivial to extend gamma to degree n. You just make it 0 in the nth degree. If you had the semi-classical grader equation, you could no longer just extend by 0 because it mixes things. Okay, so you get rid of the grader equation, the semi-classical equation, you just get this equation, and it's easy. And once you know that these guys are surjective, then it follows that these guys are surjective, well, because these are torsors for that. Okay, so yeah, not much to say here. Okay, so Another thing I said is that these equations make sense in more spaces. Why would I want to solve them in other spaces to begin with? Well, there are certain useful techniques. It was formalized by Chevre and Vilbacher. It says something along the lines of, or they call it the cubical components of a permutation representation, but it's essentially splitting down our space into representations by symmetric groups. It's very useful for computing cohomology, and a lot of these kinds of problems in these spaces reduce to computing cohomology in some sense. So I would like to apply them, but unfortunately they don't work for Broomfield conic algebras. They don't work for chord diagrams for braids, but they do work for a lot of related spaces. They work for chord diagrams for tangles. They work for these Kashiwara-Verdi algebras and some other spaces. So it's, you know, you have some equations, they make sense in these other spaces, what happens? And even more importantly for the case of the KV, for KV, is that the Broomfield conic algebra injects into KV, into KRV. So the idea was kind of, can we do the proof in KV? We know that Broomfield conic injects in there, so can we get some information about the Broomfield conic case from the KV case? Okay, so now my last slide is just about some conjectures and some computations I've done so far. So the first thing, if you recall, a braider was defined by three equations. There was this braider relation, there was this commutativity relation, there was this mixed relation. Well, I've done some computations, and it appears to degree 8 that just the first equation alone, the braid equation, implies both of the other ones. Okay, so this is kind of the analog in the angular case of this result by Ferruccio that says that a pentagon equation implies the hexagons in the Broomfield conic algebra. So a similar thing seems to be true here. Okay, that's one conjecture. Okay, so this is really the key thing. So just a little bit of where this came from. The original motivation for when we started this project a few months ago was the fact that it seems like a braider is much weaker than an associator. However, you can still construct a universal finite-type invariant of knots using a braider. So the idea was, well, we need less to construct a universal finite-type invariant, so let's find something less to do it. So we did some. Really, that was the expectation, was that there should definitely be braiders that don't come from associators. Well, we've done computations up to degree 10, and so far we're getting that the dimensions of the space of solutions to the associator equations are exactly the same as dimensions to the space of braider equations. So really, it's appearing like all braiders come from associators, which was quite surprising. So I'm just kind of thinking of how much things I've thrown away. I've thrown away all parenthesization information, right? So there's no non-associativity left. Why should I be able to get associators with no non-associativity? And I've thrown away all the rest of this structure. So I mean, it really was a surprising thing. Okay, so following from that, well, maybe the growth of the type number groups are the same. I haven't actually done any computations for this one, but I kind of just focused on that one. Thank you. And finally, so again, this is just computational, but I tried solving braiders in these types of spaces related to the KV stuff. So it turns out that in T-ought and S-ought, it's generally not possible to extend braiders degree by degree, but if you go all the way to KV itself, they do extend. Okay, so this is kind of a consistency check, right? We think braiders are the same thing as associators. We know there's this conjecture that all associators in KV come from the Broomfield conic algebra. Well, so this kind of is a consistency check on that. It seems like all braiders in KV also come from braiders in the Broomfield conic, so kind of everything is consistent. And I actually have to go to degree 7 because there was an error I fixed yesterday and haven't had time to get to degree 8. So it's actually degree 7, not degree 8. And it was just finished yesterday, so take it with a grain of salt. Okay, I'm 30 seconds early, but that's my presentation.
Sorry? This H is generic for H, it's the primitive thing.
Yeah.
But then, say when you define this Grothendieck Dyckmeier group, and you write phi of H is equal to H times something, shouldn't the result be a kind of primitive element? It's not somewhere. It just. Or maybe the question of whether this GRTA is supposed to preserve the raw products. So it's meaning sending primitive things to primitive things.
You're asking whether gamma 1 should be primitive or group like?
No, I'm asking whether gamma 1 should be 1.
Whether what?
Gamma 1 should be 1.
Gamma 1 is 1.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think he said very quickly that gamma 1 turns out to be 1, and you just explained why.
Yeah, it's that little, it's that little paragraph at the bottom of that section.
But then when you get, write the next equation, when it's phi of x to phi of science gamma 2, then again the result should be something primitive, no? And I don't think that primitive science would look like this. It's primitive.
I'm not sure.
Maybe. No, okay.
But he did say that gamma 2 is also determined. Okay.
Yeah, gamma 2 is fixed. If that helps, I know.
So,
yes,
the impression is that you are taking the PAB category and then you swap the parameterization.
Yes.
Then you get some kind of right category. And also in the other side, also you store parameterization.
Okay.
And then the idea is that you want to look at some isomorphism between them, and then you say that hopefully this will contain enough information, just information about the structure. And so my question is, why do you So why couldn't you just take the break category, so just on the one hand, and the other hand also the core diagram category, and just try to make them isomorphic? So I think that this way it would not be good, so you need some extra structure. But why do you retain exactly this extra structure, so this this animus story? So I think that there are many constructions you could do, throwing out
validation,
and why
is
this one?
So I don't know why it turns out that this one is correct. The reason we chose it was, well, because we weren't looking to find an equivalence of associators.
Yeah.
So we had this idea that, well, you can find something weaker. We were fully expecting it to be weaker, but it turned out not to be. So it was kind of surprising that we didn't end up constructing something that seemed to be equivalent to associators in the end. Why precisely this structure gives you associators, I don't know.
So couldn't you do something just not using this animus, just staying with grays and trying to do maybe, I don't know, some kind of co-products or things or module structure, and maybe the result will still be not so much bigger than associators as well?
Possibly, yeah. Seems like it could work.
What we have is what we have, right? If you can do something else,
yeah,
that's good, but we can't. But I should say, you know, you can just ask, why not directly look for expansions for braids?
Yeah.
And the answer is, okay, first of all, braids have many generators. So the braid group is generated by several things. So an expansion will be determined by more things, but this is sort of silly. But the bigger thing is that there is no extension theorem. It is not true that every partial expansion extends.
Mm-hmm.
And
but if you, so of course you need a structure relating the various ends, so probably something like co-products.
But then that is the simplest conceivable structure that will relate the various ends. Can you think of something simpler?
Well, just brains, not in the neurons. And then.
But then what operation would you use?
Then you have the operatic structure.
But then you're back to the old structure, to the old problem. Yeah, or if you just use the operatic structure without parenthetizations and there are no expansions, period. That's why you need associators to start with, because there are no expansions for the operad without parenthetizations.
So the annulus is here to be able to insert one to the other. So,
yes.
So that's it. The reason d'être of the annulus is...
Yes.
Therefore, you have an associated braider, right? Does it have such nice geometric meaning, or what is going to be? What should be?
Well, okay, so what I would, without having any knowledge, what I would guess is that that probably comes from taking the canonical flat connection on the configuration space of two points in an annulus, and then just evaluating the monodromy of that connection along the generator, just the single crossing. I would guess that one would correspond to the Casey-Greenfield associator. I don't know, but then I mean you could play a similar game where you could look at the coefficients of this KZ braider, and you know it's still an iterated integral on P1 minus 3 points. So
in your community, you have a generic construction of such a braider from the Casey connection.
Yeah,
in different configuration space.
Okay.
So no more questions. Thanks again.